Welcome to the AJP Heart and Circ podcast. I'm Kara Hansel-Keehan. Today we'll discuss a new study by Dan et al. Titled Quantification of Murine Myocardial Infarct Size Using 2D and 4D High Frequency Ultrasound. This article was published on February 8, 2022. Joining me today are Deputy Editor Zam Kasiri, authors Aaron Mulvihill and Craig Gorgon, as well as expert Daniel Panetta. Let's get started.
Thank you, Kara. I want to thank Drs. Mulvihill and Gorgon, who are the corresponding authors on this study, to give us some insight on this very interesting study. So the scope of this manuscript is about echocardiography and how it can be put to a novel use. Echocardiography is very commonly used to assess cardiac structure and function in mouse models of heart disease. And the advantage of this technique is its non-invasive nature, which allows for the monitoring of the disease progression over time. This study by Dan et al. Adds a very interesting application to this technique. The authors demonstrate that the 4D or four-dimensional imaging mode in echo can be used to measure the infarct size in post-myocardial infarction injury model. And they demonstrate that these measurements are very similar to the infarct size obtained by histological assessment of the infarct size. This particularly provides a very useful tool in that in order to measure and monitor the growth of the infarct size, the animals do not need to be euthanized, but the same animal can be monitored over the duration of the disease. So I would like to start asking a few questions. And Craig, if you could just to put everybody on the same plane, if you could tell us, what is the 2D and the 4D in echocardiography? What do each D refer to, basically?
Sure, Zam. Thanks so much. Really appreciate the opportunity to talk about the work and the collaborative effort with Dr. Mulvihill and the lab that she runs in Ottawa. So right, 2D, 4D, it's all about dimensions. So two dimensions or four dimensions. The techniques that we've described in the paper include both so that we can compare and contrast between the two. In 2D, right, we're often thinking of M-mode or motion mode ultrasound, where we're tracking just one line over time. Typically, we're picking up then both endo and epicardial boundaries of the left ventricle and looking at how those change throughout the cardiac cycle. We can also then move on to full volumetric, gated volumetric imaging in four dimensions. And that's what really this article is really focused on. So looking at from apex to base, the whole volume of the left ventricle, including the papillary muscles, the endo and epicardial boundaries from the mitral valve inflow to the aortic valve outflow, and then temporally, right, looking at what happens throughout the cardiac cycle, which is really important for these infarct models. The ischemic injury causes a clear asymmetric remodeling process to occur, especially in that apical region and often in that anterior part, depending on where the suture is placed. So using the four-dimensional techniques gives us a much better sense of how the ventricle is remodeling and changing, not just from a thickness perspective, but from a strain perspective as well, from deformation, where we see akinetic regions. And, I think Aaron will talk a little bit more about some of the work that her group did to define these akinetic regions and what that tells us about the remodeling process and disease progression in each individual animal over time.
Thanks, Craig. You touched upon a very important point, and that's what we see in the myocardial infarction model, not necessarily in other disease models, and that's the asymmetric remodeling of the heart. And this is what adds even extra values to this new technique you guys have introduced. So I'd like to go to Aaron. Do you think this technique can be used at any time point after induction of myocardial infarction, or does that depend on the tissue of the infarct, whether it is a mature infarct scar or if it's a newly formed infarct scar?
Thanks, Sam. I think this is a really important question. And what the 4D images really allowed was this visualization of the infarct in 3D, which considered the dynamic movement of the myocardium during the cardiac cycle. And it also made it possible to complete volumetric analysis to use contouring of the heart to create the four-dimensional strain maps, which was done using software developed in the Gorgon lab. So this software really allowed visualization of the 4D ultrasound data and used the border tracings to create a 3D map of strain. So our longitudinal data suggests that regions with low surface area strain are predictive of the eventual extent of the infarct size as early as day one following infarct. So in answer to your question, I think that technique can be really useful even in the early stages, whereas our wall thinning estimate, consistent with previous studies, was really predictive after 7 days. So there is a bit of differential analysis there, but certainly the surface strain estimate seemed to be quite good even in the early stages of the infarct.
Thanks, Erin. So while we are on that topic of the surface strain, my understanding was that the assessment of the infarct size is based on measuring the akinetic lengths of the myocardium, so basically the areas that are not moving. Now, would that be an issue when you're dealing with the borders of the infarct where you have kind of moving, kind of contracting, you know, reduced contractility, but not completely akinetic myocardium?
Yeah, I think this is a really great question. So the akinetic length analysis was really the simplest of all the analysis that we did, where there's basically an analysis of the akinetic segment as a ratio of the total distance. And it's really fast. So the students like this one. It only takes about 5 or 10 minutes. And so we were interested exactly with what you describe. Is there going to be subjectivity introduced to this analysis? And we found that it actually was very reproducible between users, and it provided comparable results with histology in terms of infarct size value, suggesting that akinetic length, although potentially not as powerful as the data we see with the four-dimensional analysis, was still quite good as an alternative method to histology.
Thank you. That's very important to point out. Go ahead, Craig.
I'm just going to add, Erin, that's a really important point to make, that this akinetic length assessment is easy and relatively simple to look at from both 2D and even in the volumetric assessments. But the 4D efforts also allow us to get strain maps. And then with strain, we have a much better sense of where is there low strain with low deformation, high strain with high and or normal amounts of contractility, and then everything in between. So it's not a kinetic versus kinetic region, right? We get a whole sense in the spectrum between those two. And we can really then use that to identify the border zones and the regions outside of what we consider ischemic to find regions where there is changes in deformation. So I think it provides the tool here to get a much better sense of what's happening in each individual animal than simply a standard 2D mode.
That's very important. So would you say that as long as you have any altered contraction, so if I'm thinking in terms of temporary ligations, if it's not a complete myocardial infarction, if it's a reperfused infarction, you would still be able to detect any infarct tissue or areas that have altered contractility?
Correct. Yeah. And one of our earlier studies actually did that, ischemia reperfusion for only 30 minutes, and saw that indeed you don't get the full thickness ischemic remodeling, but just a seb epicardial injury. And yet that can be picked up by the strain assessment, even though the thickness metric or just looking at remodeling has a tougher time with that.
Okay. Thank you. So just getting to the practicality aspect of things. You guys use the Vivo 3100 echo machine, the visual sonic echo machine, which is commonly used. And I was wondering, Craig, if you could comment on whether performing this 4D measurements would be practical on older models of the Vivo system or maybe in other ultrasound systems for assessment of the infarct size, say in mouse, which is a smaller rodent that is very commonly used.
Sure, Sam. First, I'll just make a quick disclosure that I am on the scientific advisory board of Fujifilm Visual Sonics and a paid consultant for that company. So I certainly have an interest in their technology and have been using their Vivo systems for a while now. The lab started with the Vivo 2100, the earlier version, and then recently upgraded to the Vivo 3100 a few years ago, which makes the 4D mode much easier to use and acquire data with. In the past, we have acquired 40 data on the 2100, but it required serial EKV assessments where we were acquiring 2D slices one at a time and then moving the transducer with a MATLAB script with a laptop attached. And it slowed things down considerably and meant that we had to do all the processing of the data offline. That same approach has then been integrated into the Vivo 3100 system and is also now available on the Vivo F2 system, the next one coming out, where there's basically a way for the user to identify the extent of the volume to acquire, as long as there's a good ECG signal and potentially respiratory gating if you want to take into account breathing effects. And then basically you can hit the button and then the system acquires the data continuously. And it's speeding things up even more so by doing dual acquisition with two lines at once, which makes this process go much, much quicker, where we were taking, you know, over an hour sometimes to get really good data on the 2100 for just one mouse. This now is down usually less than 10 minutes or so. Is that what your experience has been, Aaron, as well?
Yes, I would say our image acquisition is between 10 and 15 minutes. And then really the analysis is where we spend a bit more time with the 4D. So doing the volumetric analysis and tracing the contours of the endocardial borders can take, you know, up to 30 minutes to an hour, depending on the experience of the user. So that part, definitely we get additional information, which is really valuable, but it does take extra time to obtain this information.
And knowing that, there is a lot of effort, our group included, to speed that up using techniques that make that segmentation more quick and reliable, especially with artificial intelligence and neural networks to speed up that process so that you're not having to manually segment endo and epicardial boundaries at each position for every animal throughout the cycle.
Great. And just to clarify, during that 1 hour or something that the analysis is taking place, the mouse is not under anesthesia, right? So the whole process that involves the mouse and the imaging is completed within, you said, 5 to 10 minutes?
5 to 15, yeah. We'll say. Yeah, correct.
5 to 15. Yeah. Okay. Because we do EKV. We've done EKV and it does take a little longer. And probably the whole thing can be done within, as long as the animal is not kept on the table for too long, I think. The animal welfare is one of the concerns if that becomes the case.
No, we acquire quite a few animals in one session typically and can run through them relatively quickly. And hopefully that's one of the advantages too, right? You don't have to spend a lot of time lining up the transducer with the perfect angle and the perfect acquisition plane. You can basically acquire the whole volume relatively quickly and move on to the next mouse and do your analysis offline.
So we have Dr. Daniel Panetta here, who is an expert in the imaging system. And I would very much like to hear what his thinking was about this study.
Yes, thank you. So I think this is very important. There are several imaging modalities used for measuring infarct sites. And for sure, ultrasound is the one which is more versatile because it's fast. It doesn't require complex protocols of injection of tracer or contrast agents. And this is why it's widespread in use among people doing this kind of experiment. I have to say that this work is very important because it focuses on robustness and reproducibility of experiments, which is very important. And especially it allows people to do this experiment in a fast way. And this is very important because it allows the acquisition of lots of data in a reduced time. And this is in contrast with what we do, for instance, with micro CT or with micro PET, in which the experiments are very long. And also radiation is used, and there is a concern of using it in a repetitive manner, especially in longitudinal studies. And so having a fast reproducible measurement of infarct sites using ultrasound, which is non-invasive, but also not harmful in long longitudinal studies is, I think, very, very important.
Thanks very much, Daniel. I would like to invite Aaron and Craig to share anything, any interesting experience you had in the process of completing the study, if there is anything that we didn't discuss today and you would like to share with our listeners.
Sure. So I think what was really amazing about the study is that it took place completely during the COVID-19 pandemic, where we contacted the Gorgon Lab, knowing that they have a lot of experience with analysis of 4D images. And they were able to share their software with us to create these amazing 4D strain maps, which we now know are a powerful mechanism to really understand infarct remodeling. And we were able to do this completely remotely. So, you know, we put together all of the files on a cloud and we're able to have our teams work very well and cooperatively together to bring this study to fruition. So I think that it is really amazing result from, you know, having to really think creatively on how to collaborate during the pandemic.
I would agree completely, Erin. And it's been wonderful to work with your group and see some of the data you've been able to collect with the incredible surgical expertise you have access to and the wonderful animal resources and different animal models, mouse models of ischemic injury that you can create. The thing I'll add is that like a lot of papers, peer review often helps improve the quality of the study. And so if you figure 10 specifically was something we added in the peer review process, where initially we were really focused on the method and just comparing 2D, 4D histology, but the reviewers were asking about longitudinal data. And we had at that point finished a small longitudinal study. So we were able to include over time tracking the same animals at days, you know, baseline, and then 1, 3, 7, 14, and 28, which was really giving a sense of how the strain estimated infarct sizing compared to the wall thinning, just remodeling perspective that gives us that longitudinal assessment. So appreciate the reviewers and the editors and the chance to improve the paper as it went through that process.
Thanks, Craig and Erin. And I can say that at AGP Heart, you can always count on constructive reviews. So Daniel, is there anything else that you would like to add to your comments?
Yes, sure. I think that especially regarding the 2D measurement of the akinetic length, which is very easy and also of immediate interpretation, it's very good having a metric like that, because I think that also in view of creating large databases of such data, for instance, in multi-center studies, this could help, for instance, having more reproducibility between the centers. And this can facilitate the construction of robust models, which are highly important in this era of precision medicine, in which we try to, for instance, train deep neural networks or other kind of models that requires very large data sets. So having more reproducibility between one center and another is highly important. And this is facilitating by the fact that we can rely on easy and, let's say, robust metrics of measurements.
Yes, I agree. Those are very important points. Another important point that we are trying to consider and enforce in AJP Heart is to include both sexes in the studies, because we know that the females are really as susceptible to heart disease than males, and we are trying to provide a full picture of the sex differences in disease progression. Were you able to use your technique to also analyze the infarct size in female mice? Did you face any technical issues, or did you have any different findings in females compared to males? Craig, if you could please.
Thanks, Sam. That's a great point. This certainly was a methods focused study where we were homed in on the different techniques. But yes, we used both male and female mice in the study. We had 3 females with another 22 males. So not enough to draw any sex differences, but we really did want to make sure we reported both and use both going forward. And I think that's a great opportunity for future study to see how infarcts adapt in both and remodel the heart in both sexes, and then see how the strain mapping technique could help distinguish those and to determine if there are any sex differences. Erin, do you have anything to add there?
I agree that it will be very important going forward using some of these techniques now that they're developed to really determine if we have sex differences in remodeling and in response to any treatments.
So that's great. Thank you, Craig and Erin. I think what is important here is that since you're reporting the infarct size as a percentage of the whole heart, the difference in size of the male heart compared to female heart, which sometimes is bigger than the males grow a little more than females. So that would not be an issue here because you are reporting a relative value. So absolutely including some females in the study has provided some additional insight to the infarct size progression in males and female mice. So I would like to thank you all for taking the time to join us today. This study provides a new approach to non-invasively measure and monitor the infarct size in myocardial infarction model in mice. I highly encourage the listeners to give this paper a read. There is a lot more details in the manuscript than we were able to cover in this podcast. And again, I would like to thank Drs. Malville, Gergen, and Panetta for joining us today.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the AJP Heart and Circ podcast. Our theme music was written and performed by Ray Mitchell. Catch the latest episodes of our podcast at physiology.org/journal/AJP Heart.